Human-Like Walking with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics. Hello and welcome to the 96th episode of Robots. I'm Jana, and in today's episode, we will be exploring human-like walking with UK-based sub-Romanian Roma Murthy and Brazilian-based Felipe Brandao Cavalcanti. But first, as always, let's take a look at what's been happening in robotics. Researchers at Latitude Research, the LEGO Learning Institute, and Australia's Project Synthesis have conducted a study of how children see robots fitting into their lives. 348 children between the ages of 8 and 12 from Africa, America, Australia and Europe were asked to draw and write a story about what would happen if robots were a part of their everyday life at school and beyond. Unsurprisingly, most children imagined their robot to be humanoid. Somewhat more unexpected was that children often imagined robots as role models, excelling at maths, science, but also social interaction. Most surprising was that children imagined robots to naturally integrate into their everyday life. The described robots were trusted and cherished friends, joining in their learning and playing, helping with chores and homework, and mediating the children's social interactions with parents, teachers, and peers. The report is excellent news for roboticists, as it implies that children would welcome rather than reject robots in their world. And it points to a bright future for the roboticists of tomorrow. To have a look at some of the children's drawings, their stories, and the full report, visit our website at robotspodcast.com. Sub-Romanian Roma Murthy is assistant professor at the School of Informatics at the University of Edinburgh in the UK. He spoke to our reporter Per about the development of better walking robots and the progress that's been made in this field since its beginnings in the 1980s, which was majorly impacted by the introduction of machine learning and other technologies.
Today I'm here with Subraman Ramamurthy, and we're at Edinburgh University. And we're going to talk a bit about the latest progress in bipedal walking, because we at the podcast have noticed that many new projects are coming out and they're walking just beautifully. We see the Petman, we see Asimo is walking much better, and other robotics from Japan is also, they're walking toe heel, they're walking much, running much faster, they can jump on one leg. Could you speak a bit about what you think is the course of this progress and how do you see the trajectory for the future?
So in my own opinion, the major breakthrough in locomotion, in bipedal locomotion, it actually happened a while back, but it's only now being recognized as being the key issue.
That's usually it is with progress. Yeah. When it happens, it's just one guy sitting in his tub saying, "Eureka!"
Yeah. So I personally would attribute the kind of major insight to people such as Mark Rabert, who's now the head of Boston Dynamics, but he was once a professor who wrote a book on legged robots that balance like many, many years back. And there were others such as Tad McGeer. I mean, Dan Kodich has done a lot of work on this. And I think the essential insight that these guys had, which I think was very nice, was to say that if you just look at walking as yet another planning problem, you know, that you have an 80 degrees of freedom and so on, and I just want to find a trajectory, then it looks intractable, not just because it's large, but because the dynamics are nonlinear and complicated. You have switches and jumps, you have all of these things. So, but then if you flip it around and if you start asking the question of, you know, what is the essential description of the task? Then you find that actually, when you look at natural walkers like people, then there are some very elegant sort of insights, such as that you just behave like an inverted pendulum, and there's a lot of passive dynamics going on in your body that simplifies the problem down to the fact that there's only really a few variables that matter. And if you tune them just right, then you get much more elegant walking than the sort of heavily, brute forced sort of solutions. And these insights are old. So McGeer, Raybert, and all these people did this, like, you know, by the 80s, they were already doing some of these things. But then it's only recently that these things have made contact with other ways of thinking, such as machine learning. So now we find that actually machine learning problems seem hard, but if you can constrain them just right by defining a solution space that's defined in terms of these kinds of effects, like utilization of passive dynamics and so on, then the learnability goes up. Mm-hmm. So like a very nice example that I think is Russ Tedrake, who's at MIT, he wrote his PhD thesis on trying to learn to walk, so trying to adapt gaits. Mm-hmm. And what I found quite interesting from looking at his work was he began with a passive dynamic walker. So unlike with many other robots, this walker, if you just put it down and switched off the computer, it would still have certain elements of standing up and being able to walk. And then on top of that, when you do reinforcement learning, actually the whole process works much, much better because you can now adapt knowing that you're living in a space that's quite nice. And so these kinds of insights are now beginning to be exploited more and more. Mm-hmm. And so my own PhD thesis I wrote in this area, and this is the kind of thing I was thinking about when I was working on that. So I was looking at the question of how do you modulate, let's say, foot placement and your gait in a setting in which they're just presented to you one at a time, the world keeps changing, and you have to make sure that you respect, you know, dynamics and stability constraints and all of this. And so the way I went about it was what I've just been saying, which is that we can qualitatively characterize what the space of solutions looks like. And then we can restrict all of our learning to be within that space. And it doesn't have to be that complicated then. It actually works nicely.
Mm-hmm. Do you see that this increased speed of progress here is going to continue over the coming years? Are we going to see robots walking faster and or handling problems and rougher terrain?
Yeah, I would expect so. So when you look at Big Dog and Petman and all of these, I mean, these are... I mean, of course, people like Mark Raybert and Al Ridsey and all of them are involved in this. And clearly, I mean, they understand this deeply and there's now enough traction. So people want it. For a long time, especially when I was a PhD student, people kept saying, yeah, you can build these robots, but nobody really wants it.
Yeah, I think that that's a problem we have many times, that we're trying to predict the use of something that is impossible to predict the use of. When people built and designed, thought of and built the internet, I'm quite certain they didn't envision Twitter or Facebook or all this. Get the base layers to work properly and people are going to find uses for them. It's like with everything. Use is the next step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so the fact that people want it, the fact that we have insights, and the fact that there's this whole modern, you know, machinery of, you know, learning and adaptation and computing power.
The theories are kind
power.
Of meeting. The progress is accelerating because it happens on two or more fronts at the same time.
Yeah.
And then they're merging to produce a result.
Yeah. And one other thing I haven't even mentioned is we are able to get much better data from people. So people are able to motion capture interesting ways and then try to see if, you know, we can try to extract some of these principles. So when I say things like the inverted pendulum is the model that underlies walking, one of the questions that people always have is how will we find more and more such models? It's very hard.
Yeah.
And so one hypothesis is maybe if you look at the data that people are generating, you will begin to get insights and you can somehow combine that with other forms of learning.
Yeah. Yeah, again, progress in multiple areas coming together. Yeah. So do you see that there is any fundamental problems that when you're thinking about this space, you worry about? Is there anything that, that is a potential problem out there? Something that you feel that is out of what we currently know much about and have solved? Is there some big dark hole out there that...
Well, it's hard to find a big dark hole, but there's one thing that I have often found curious, having worked in the area a little bit, which is that... the way in which an engineer goes about designing these systems is you understand some of the underlying principles and you're able to make statements such as my system will do this under these conditions and so on. And a lot of the modern progress has come from the sort of machine learning tradition in which we are more saying, I mean, having looked at this data, I can infer that these are the right things to do. Now, one of the big difficulties in machine learning is extrapolation is hard.
Mm-hmm. And from one task to another.
Yeah. And so there are going to be lots of things. I mean, there are going to be a lot of things that we can just motion capture and our data set is good enough. So Google has demonstrated that, you know, data can solve a lot of problems. But then there are going to be problems that you haven't quite seen. And you're going to be forced to extrapolate. And when you're forced to extrapolate, if your models aren't terribly insightful, then you can get into trouble.
Do you think that we could detect that we're now out? Say the robot comes to a situation, it detects that it's extrapolating and it's outside the comfort zone, so to say. Could we just have the robot not do anything? That could we detect that now we're probably on thin ice and just kind of say that I'm not comfortable doing this as a human would be? I mean, say if somebody wanted me to ride a horse, I'd say I don't know how to ride a horse. I'd probably have to learn first.
Yes. So in principle, yes.
Great.
In practice,
because that's safety-wise, that's very important that the robot can say, stop, I don't know this. You have to teach me, then I could do it.
Yeah. In principle, yes. But these are the kinds of issues where we are at the frontiers of knowledge and it's not entirely clear how best to do these things.
Ah, interesting, interesting. We always wanted to be at the frontier of knowledge here at the podcast. So thank you for being a part of it and thank you for listening.
Felipe Brandão Cavalcanti is an electrical engineering student and is working on humanoid robots at the Lara Lab at the University of Brazil under Professor Giovanni Borges. He spoke to our reporter Priscilla about his project, which focuses on the study and implementation of gait generation and balance control for small humanoid robots.
Felipe Cavalcanti, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Sure. I'm a student of Professor Giovanni. I've been at UNB since 2007. I'm currently at my ninth semester, and I've been working with him since my second semester with humanoid robots.
What does the humanoid do?
Right. So the humanoid has the main advantage of the humanoid is that it can work on environments designed for human presence. So it can walk upstairs. It could turn on off light switches. It could use tools and environments designed for humans. Our research right now, we are focusing on the equilibrium and gait generation problem. So we want the robot to be able to stand up on its own, reject external disturbances. So if you can touch him and you can poke him and he won't fall. And we also want him to walk by itself. So then we could work on the higher level problems. So where should the robot go and how should it turn on and off the whatever it needs to do?
How did you manage to keep it standing or not falling even after pushing him? What are the sensors that maintain the robot steady?
Okay, so to keep him stable, we actually use many, many sensors, and we use a lot of math. Math is the key here, not the sensors. We use something called an accelerometer, and we also use something called a gyrometer. The accelerometer will give us the acceleration of the robot, so from that we are able to sense the gravity, and the gyrometer will give us the speed that it's rotating about the gravity vector. So using that information and using mathematical models associated with the robot and where the joints are and where the joints should be, we can calculate mathematically what the robot should do so it should be stable. So it's mostly about math, not about the sensors.
Is this a commercial robot or did you start it from scratch?
Okay, so what we did, we took a commercial platform called the Bioloid from a Korean company called Robotis, and based on that, we threw away most of the software, and we wrote our own. We also added a couple more sensors, a couple more computers in it, and using that, we turned this toy into a fully featured research platform. We actually have some more sensors that we're not using right now, so the robot has more capabilities that we are not exploring right at this moment. But it was a very interesting project actually to take the toy and turn it into a research device.
How long did it take to build this robot?
So, right, we've been working with this project for 3 years now. We just completed our third year. Most of the time we spend actually writing software and writing the control algorithm. So right now we have a pretty decent algorithm for stabilization. We are now going to switch to more precise modeling and starting to work on even more complicated math to get it to work even better.
Who are the partners for the humanoid project?
Well, this project has been fundly mostly by my professor, Professor Giovanni. We also received funding from the Scientific Initiation Program at the University of Brasilia and CNPq, which funds this scholarships.
Okay, well, thank you, Philip.
And that's it for today. As always, you can find a lot more information and videos linked to today's episode on our website at www.robotspodcast.com. We hope you'll join us again next time. Goodbye. Human-like walking with robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.